Welcome to the Arthroscopy Journal podcast. I'm Dr. Chris Tucker from the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center and the podcast founding editor. Today, we are discussing elbow ulnar collateral ligament repair with suture augmentation. I'm joined today by Dr. Nick Verma from Midwest Orthopedics at Rush in Chicago, Illinois. Amongst his many titles, Dr. Verma is the head team physician for the Chicago White Sox, and in that role, he cares for throwing athletes at the highest professional level. I look forward to his comments on today's article with that background and experience in mind. Dr. Verma was the senior author on the article titled Elbow Ulnar Collateral Ligament Repair with Suture Augmentation, Results in Good Clinical Results, a Return to Play Rate Between 67 and 93%, and a Postoperative Complication Rate Up to 11.9%, a Systematic Review, published in the October 2023 issue of Arthroscopy, Sports Medicine, and Rehabilitation. Nick, congrats on your work and welcome back to our podcast.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It's always fun to be here and thanks for asking me to join.
We appreciate you taking the time to join us. Nick, the theme of this month's ANA newsletter and this CME podcast episode is the ulnar collateral ligament of the elbow. I'm excited to discuss this topic with you, particularly the findings in your recently published systematic review. Could you first start us off by telling us a little bit more about yourself and what you're currently up to with respect to your clinical practice, residency and fellowship training, and team coverage?
Absolutely. So I am the director of the sports medicine and shoulder service at Midwest Orthopedics and Rush University Medical Center. I hold an academic appointment at Rush as a professor within the Department of Sports Medicine and Shoulder. I oversee our fellowship program. We now have 5 sports medicine fellows, 1 shoulder elbow fellow, and also actively involved in teaching from our residency program as well. My clinical practice is fairly busy. It's probably about 70% upper extremity at this point. Lots of baseball elbow and shoulder sprinkled in there. As you already mentioned, I do take care of the Chicago White Sox as part of my clinical responsibilities. And then my research interests have typically surrounded upper extremity problems in sports medicine.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I know you're avidly active in education in multiple realms. I'm familiar with you mostly through ANA. And also got a chance to visit with you during the ANA Traveling Fellowship back in 2017. So appreciate all you're doing to educate all of us on those particular upper extremity injuries that you do focus on. Can you tell us a little bit more about that interest in elbow injuries and surgery and how much of a role that's currently playing in your practice?
Sure. I think, you know, as a baseball physician, it's impossible to get away from the elbow. It's a little bit overwhelming in terms of the amount of elbow surgery and injuries that are happening, not only around the league, but frankly, when you take care of a major league team in your market, automatically you start to see lots of patients that are seeking out shoulder, elbow, throwing injury experts. And so your practice naturally matures into a throwing shoulder, throwing elbow type practice. I think what we're all dealing with is the fact that these injuries are becoming more common. It's the truth of the matter. If you look across Major League Baseball, the number used to be about a third. It's probably now above 40% of throwing athletes, particularly the pitchers, will undergo an elbow procedure, Tommy John reconstruction at some point during their career, which is a little bit overwhelming to think about. I think where most of us have really been seeing the huge uptick in the amount of surgery and injuries that happen are even below the major league level. So it's in the younger age group, starting as young as 12 or 13 years of age with the avulsion injuries, and then moving on to the ligament injuries. And I think in large part, that's really fostered this interest in primary repair and suture reconstruction, is that the injury pattern that we see in these younger athletes is a little bit different. They have very healthy ligaments, but they pop them off. When they're really young, they pop them off with a piece of bone from one end to the other. But as they get more into the adolescent age group, they start to have also isolated either proximal or distal avulsions. And that's where we're starting to see really the sweet spots for these repair procedures.
Yeah, I'd like to dial into that specific topic a little deeper here. Could you just review for us on a little bit higher level the main differences between the UCL reconstruction, as you mentioned, the Tommy John procedure, and then this more contemporary UCL repair as you reviewed in your paper, speaking to kind of the indications, the techniques, and then some of the advantages of each of them?
Sure. So as we all know, the UCL reconstruction has been the gold standard for management of UCL injuries in the throwing athlete. That generally involves some type of a graft reconstruction. Most commonly, we would use a palmaris versus a gracilis tendon. There is some experience with allograft usage, particularly in revision situations that have shown good results as well. And there's a variety of different techniques that you can use to reconstruct the ligament, whether it's the traditional Job technique using multiple tunnels on either side, the docking technique where you use an ulnar sublime tubercle tunnel docked into a single tunnel on the humeral side, or now we see single tunnel techniques for both single tunnels on the sublime tubercle and the humerus, and various different fixation methods. And the reality is that no matter what method you kind of look at, the results with Tommy John reconstruction have been very favorable, with 85 to 90% return to sports rate. As you know, the big downside of Tommy John reconstruction is just the time that it takes for patients to recover. And we really think that that's related to the maturation of the ligament itself and the ability to gradually load the ligament such that it can tolerate the loads that are placed onto it during, you know, throwing athletics with velocities now regularly north of 90 miles per hour in the major league level. Many pitchers throwing well above 95 on an average basis, which is probably in large part what's contributing to the risk of injury in the first place. We now have a fairly good experience with reparative procedures. And so the reparative procedure is not to put in an external graft, but rather to repair what's there. And Jeff Dugas introduced this concept of using a brace augmentation. So we take the native ligament, we repair it, and then we augment it with the collagen dip tape, which allows us to improve the strength at time equals zero. And we think that the biologic coating probably improves some of the healing characteristics of integration of the tape into the repair itself. We also now are talking about a third procedure, which is the hybrid procedure, which is where you repair, you augment with the tape, and then you put a graft over the top. So there are really three main procedures that get done typically: repair alone, graft alone, or repair plus graft and suture tape augmentation. I think in large part, the differences in the indications are based on the age of the patient, the pathology that you're dealing with, and the level of throwing athlete that you're at. So for me, the big difference is when you see these younger players, they more often have healthy ligaments with a proximal or distal avulsion. And that's really the best indication for a reparative procedure, because you don't need new collagen necessarily. You just need to reestablish continuity of the ligament where it is avulsed from the bone. Whereas as we start to get into the major league level, those players often have concomitant elbow pathology. So they've been throwing a little bit longer, their ligament is degenerative in nature, and we don't feel comfortable that repairing alone is going to solve the clinical problem. We feel like we need some external collagen to help them to restore the native ligament function, but also give them longevity of that ligament over time. I think what we're going to find going forward is now that we're doing these procedures earlier as well, we're going to find that we now are dealing more and more in the revision situations. And there may be an advantage for an early repair and a later reconstruction if necessary, in terms of just preserving bone and anatomy, so that when you have to go back and do a reconstruction, if necessary, it's more like a quote unquote native elbow compared to a true revision reconstruction where a graft has already been placed.
Interesting. So what I'm hearing from you is that, as with all surgeries that we do, patient selection and choosing the right procedure for the right person is paramount to success. And like you're saying, the repair probably tends to trend more towards the younger athlete without the chronic UCL changes versus, like you're saying, by the time they get to the pros, they probably have some chronic changes that aren't isolated repairable. Is that consistent with kind of what you're trying to explain to me here?
Yeah, I think there's three criteria that go into it. What's the level of throwing that they do, and where are they in their kind of professional or amateur progression? Number two is, what's the nature of the injury or the pathology, and how healthy is the native ligament? And then number three is, unfortunately, what really comes into this in some situations is, what's the timeline that they have to recover? So we may push the envelope a little bit in a major league player who's got to get back for the next season, because otherwise they're going to be out of baseball without a contract opportunity. Similarly, in the younger players, if you think about a junior going into their senior year, who is basically trying to get recruited to the next level, if you take them out of their senior year, their baseball career is done. So there are multiple levels of factors that go into dealing with these athletes regarding timelines and contract statuses and other things that can influence the decision as well, which is where it becomes really complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think important to highlight that your systematic review gave some background information on the biomechanical studies that have shown that the UCL repair with suture augment has been found to have increased resistance to gap formation at time zero compared to the UCL reconstructions, which may be what's facilitating this earlier, quicker recovery. So there is bench research to support that biomechanically as well.
No, absolutely. All of the research that's been done, functionality of the repair. There's now newer literature looking at the hybrid reconstructions that shows that adding a brace, even in the setting of a reconstruction, can add some improved time equals zero biomechanical performance to a reconstruction itself. But remember, when we're doing these biomechanical studies, inherently, we're working on a pretty normal elbow. So they don't have chronic changes in the ligament. We're detaching the ligament. We're repairing a normal ligament versus a potentially diseased ligament. And they don't have any of the other secondary changes that may go along with the throwing elbow that you're going to see with chronicity. So these are things like bone spurs, motion loss, chondromalacia, some of the secondary characteristics that are commonly seen, particularly as a thrower gets a little bit more mature into their lifespan.
All great points. So you and your co-authors set out to review the clinical outcomes, the return to sport rates, and the complications after UCL repair with suture augment in your systematic review. What were your key findings?
So we looked at about over 500 patients that came from four studies. There was one very large study from Jeff Dugas, a couple smaller studies. And what we found overall was that the complication rate was very comparable to a reconstructive procedure. We saw that the time for recovery can be fairly wide, but the earlier recovery was notable for many of the athletes in the study. And we found that the outcomes were very similar in nature to what one would expect with a reconstruction. Now, whenever you read these throwing athlete studies, there's a lot of different evaluations that have to go into it. So I'll give you a good example. When you look at time frame for recovery, as you know from our study, I think the earliest time frame was 6 months. Some of the longer time frames were 17 months or plus. The problem with that is that particularly in many of our North American environments, throwing is seasonal. So if you do a reconstruction in October or November, and a patient has a 6 to 8 month recovery window, they may not be ready to throw in game until September, at which time the season's over. So you may have another 6 months of quote unquote recovery time simply because they're not in season. So that's where the recovery time element can be a little bit hard to establish. Similarly, when we talk about return to throw rates at the same or higher level, you know, some of these kids just don't get a chance to play again. It may be that they go through the reconstruction and for whatever reason, they have different interests. They go to college and maybe they don't make the team. There are other reasons why people don't return to sport other than their reconstruction didn't work. And so that's when you do these review papers and even when you do the actual research, it can be very hard to sort out procedural outcomes versus life outcomes and procedural timelines versus seasonality timelines.
That's very interesting about the seasonality. Have you seen any change in that with the year-round training that a lot of these youth athletes are doing nowadays? I mean, I know there are travel teams and even indoor camps throughout the winter now for these athletes who, you know, are focused on a single sport. Are you still seeing that trend personally, you know, on that delay to return if they're kind of, quote, recovered by the end of the baseball season? Or is that changing at all now?
Yeah, I think we do see that trend. Unfortunately, we see that trend as being one of the major trends that's causing this epidemic of ulnar collateral ligament injuries is that kids are throwing harder, they're throwing faster, they're throwing motion balls earlier, and they're throwing more commonly as a year-round episode rather than just I play baseball from, you know, starting to get ready in January, but then by July, I may be playing a little bit of summer ball, but now I'm going to focus on my fall sport. I do think that we see that trend even in the post-operative setting, but I think the difference is we're much more vigilant in terms of when throwers return and what's important to them in returning when they're coming off of surgery, they're under the care of a physician, they're working with athletic trainers and strength and conditioning coaches. So they probably have more expert supervision advising them about what's in their best interests from a return and at what level and at what time point compared to, you know, before they come to see us with the injury.
Yeah, as you mentioned multiple times now, a main impetus for the emergence of this new innovation with the UCL repair and the suture augment is this attempt to decrease the time to return to sport. I'm just curious to hear from your personal experience caring for these patients at the various levels. Is there a big difference in the recovery between the Tommy John recon and the UCL repair in getting them back to return to sport and then their ultimate clinical success?
So I think the answer to the ultimate clinical success is early on, no. I think the reconstruction is still the gold standard. I think if we can achieve the same results as a reconstruction, that's really what we're shooting to do. The second question that remains unanswered is what's the long-term durability of the repair? So we think about reconstructions as probably having a lifespan of between 8 to 12 years on average. Are we going to get that similar longevity out of a repair? Or do we get a kid who's 17 to 21 or 22, and then maybe the repaired ligament tears again and they need a formal reconstruction? That answer is yet to be determined. I do think that all of us universally are seeing earlier recovery and early ability to return to sport. In fact, many of us have kind of dialed back our rehab programs and return to throw programs in the reconstruction group, where we're being a little bit more conservative even. I think there was a push towards accelerating, and many of us thought that we were starting to see some increased risk of re-injury. So that's the one area where I think we can clearly define that the return to sports rates appear faster. The question that's remaining is there a trade-off in doing that between re-rupture risk later or earlier recovery now?
Yeah, absolutely. That was one highlight I had taken away from your article, was just looking at, is the risk of that potential lower success worth that short-term potential of getting them back quicker? I was going to say, that's something I would keep an eye on too.
And that's where the cost-benefit value is what's really important. And so the other point that I would make is, if you look at the individuals that were involved in this study, it skews younger, right? There's still a wide range of individual, but it generally skews the range and the mean skews younger than what you would expect from a normal reconstruction group. And I think that's exactly what we're talking about, is based on the pathology, based on the ability to get them back sooner, and based on decision-making trees that we use in taking care of these athletes. I'll give you a good example. I saw a kid in the office the other day, junior, has one more year of senior season coming up, wants to be able to play, probably is not interested in playing at the college level. We take a junior now and do a formal reconstruction, it's plus minus whether he's going to get back and be able to participate in a senior season. If I do a repair right now, quick procedure, relatively low morbidity, very high chance of getting him through one more year or two more years or even three more years of baseball. So that to me is a great opportunity to be able to offer a kid an opportunity for a procedure that gets him through high school. And maybe that's their only goal, or maybe they want to play junior college level. But, you know, we have to think about all of these individuals who want to play baseball, but have a finite plan in terms of when their baseball career is over and they're ready to move on into something else.
Yeah, that's a great clinical example to kind of bring home just how individualized this can become. Shifting away from the treatment a little bit, I wanted to hear your thoughts on preventative measures. I know we talked about the seasonality, but things like strengthening and conditioning programs, the youth sports focused educational programs and restrictions like pitch counts, and then even some efforts to encourage avoiding that single sport specialization. Do you think these are effective? Do you think there's something more should we be doing on the preventative side?
So traditionally, those are all the things that we've been doing, is helping to provide education, not only to kids, but to parents, coaches, and trainers about what is appropriate health and usage for an individual. And the one thing that I often tell our parents is, look, we've got kids that are high level college kids who are definitively going to go pro. We've got minor league individuals. We've got major league individuals. We would never ask them to pitch at the level that you're asking your 17-year-old kid to do, between going from high school to travel to fall ball to showcases and then right back into the high school season, right? That doesn't happen at any level of baseball other than high school. I think in large part, it's fortunately driven by peer pressure. It's driven by kind of chasing the scholarship. It's driven by the fact that many of these institutions now that handle baseball or lacrosse or whatever it is in a younger individual are money-making, you know, businesses. And so they can't only work February to September. You know, they've got to find a way to be profitable in January, February, March, and April. And so Johnny down the street is doing it. And so my kid has to do it too, to get the same level of ability or the same chance as his peers in making it to the next level. So I think, unfortunately, we as adults have created this system that drives kids into this early sports specialization. And the second part of that is that kids can no longer play beyond 12 or 13 just because they want to play. You know what I mean? It's you can't play baseball or any sport for that matter, often at a high school level at most high schools, unless you're going to make your commitment to doing that. You're practicing before school, you're practicing after school, you're doing stuff on the weekend, you're playing travel teams. It's I'm going to be on the newspaper or I'm going to play sports. There's no more intermediate where kids can say, I really want to play sports. I love this sport. I know I'm not good enough to play college, but I enjoy it. I'm good enough to contribute. You know, there's lots of life lessons to be learned there. But I also want to do things like, you know, being in the math club or on the editorial board for my newspaper. I think we've gotten away from that and we need to reemphasize that as the adults in the room. The last thing that I think is really causing this problem is this emphasis on gaining velocity and trying to gain velocity early. So it's weighted ball programs and the use of the radar guns and, you know, kids competing against one another. The velocity is the killer. And we've shown that in some of our work from Rush, that there's a linear relationship between ulnar collateral ligament injury and velocity. It's just physics. The harder you throw, the bigger you are, the longer your arm, the more torque on the elbow. And the more you do that, the more likely it is that at some point that ulnar collateral ligament is going to give out. I'm not sure I know how to fix that, but I think it's just another warning sign to parents and kids and coaches that there is a penalty for rapid increases in velocity with short-term programs, which is likely translates into increased injury risk. So that's the other point that I think we need to hammer home, is there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah, and I wonder how much our own success with treating these injuries contributes to the lack of recognition by athletes and parents that it is an issue, because I think a lot of folks come into my clinic just saying, well, if you've got a fix for it, what's the big deal? You know, I'm going to push as hard as I can. And then eventually if the wheels come off, well, you'll just fix me and get me back, because everybody gains 4 miles an hour on their fastball with a Tommy John anyways.
A lot of misconceptions there about what we can accomplish with surgery. A lot of underrepresentation of complications that can be associated with surgery in the paper that we're referring to, albeit not all of the complications were major, but the complication rate was double digits. I think if I remember correctly, it was 17% in the paper that we're talking about here. And the other thing that I don't think people really understand, and I think where children or adolescents, high school, junior college level, what they don't really understand is the commitment level that's required for the rehabilitation process. I mean, it's a big deal and it's a long undertaking, and it's a really lonely, psychologically difficult undertaking for these kids, because they're away from the teams, they're away from doing what they want. There's a lot of individual work, there's a lot of patience in just waiting for this ligament to mature. The time when that you start returning to throwing, there are often setbacks in the early 2, 3, 4 months after getting back. And for many kids, they lose interest, get passed by the sport because they're now a year behind their peers. So there's definitely a penalty to pay for, it's not a free lunch surgery, as I talked about.
Yeah, this is a great systematic review. You did acknowledge several of your own limitations, the sample size, the overall low level of evidence, and relatively short follow-up. Do you think that this technique of UCL repair with suture augment is promising enough to warrant further investigation and lending itself to a randomized control trial, head-to-head comparison to the Tommy John? Do you think that's something worth pursuing? Do you think that's going to happen?
Well, I think getting the highest level of evidence is always worth pursuing. But having done some of those studies in the past, as you know, and I know, they're not easy. They're expensive. They take a long, long time to do. And so I think it would be really challenging to get to the point where we could really head-to-head compare outcomes. Do have a multi-center initiative that's happening now. It's been spearheaded by Peter Chalmers in Utah and a couple other guys around the country. And so I think our ability to collaborate and collect data, I think the UCL repair is here to stay. I think what we really need to establish are what are the correct indications for each of these procedures. You know, a good example of that is the hybrid reconstruction that I just talked about. When do you really need to add that brace? Is there a penalty to adding the brace? Can you make the reconstruction too stiff? Do you stress shield the ligament such that it doesn't mature as quickly as it normally would? And remember, there's a penalty to putting multiple holes in a very small area of real estate when you're drilling tunnels and then putting anchors on top of that. And then what do we do next when those things start failing? And now you've got a bone with 3 holes in it instead of 2 holes in it. and you're trying to find real estate to put a new ligament back in. So these are all questions that we're going to need to tackle as we go forward to understand what, you know, the if the reconstruction alone works very well, what are the advantages and need to add a suture tape augmentation, and what scenarios warrant consideration for that?
Yeah, excellent. All fantastic food for thought. Nick, you provided us a great summary of the surgical management of UCL injuries about the elbow, especially the outcomes of repair with suture augment. Did you have any other closing remarks before we wrap up?
Well, the only other closing remark I'd make is, you know, the one thing that we're leaving off the table is non-operative treatment, right? And so in these younger individuals, we have pretty good success with that. The data in the literature today is somewhere between 50% and 2/3 will get better with a partial tear treated conservatively, particularly in a proximal location. So the last thing I would just say to the listener is remember there's an option, especially in these younger individuals, with a good success rate of treating kids non-operatively for these UCL injuries. And my indications are generally first-time treatment, partial tears, particularly on the proximal side of the ligament. I don't know if there's a benefit for biologics, although there is some limited low-quality data that would suggest that maybe it would help. It's a do-no-harm type of thing. But I think you give them the fair 12-week evaluation to decide if a surgery is necessary, unless they've got an obvious acute full thickness tear that clearly is indicated for a surgical reconstruction or repair.
Yeah, it's an excellent point to conclude with. Nick, I want to congratulate you again on all your work, and thanks for sharing your time and your thoughts with all of us today.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Verma's article titled "Elbow Ulnar Collateral Ligament Repair with Suture Augmentation Results in Good Clinical Results, a Return to Play Rate Between 67 and 93%. And a postoperative complication rate up to 11.9%, a systematic review, is published in the October 2023 issue of Arthroscopy Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation, which is available online at www.arthroscopysportsmedicineandrehabilitation.org. This concludes this edition of the Arthroscopy Journal podcast. The views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of the Arthroscopy Association or the Arthroscopy Journal. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next time.